When 16-year-old Odile stands alone at her school's cloakroom door, she has no idea that the choices she's about to make will echo across multiple realities. Scott Alexander Howard's haunting debut novel, The Other Valley, has been praised by literary critics as a masterful exploration of fate, choice, and the weight of knowing too much about one's future. The book has developed a cult following among philosophy students and time travel enthusiasts alike, with readers often reporting they finish it in a single sitting, unable to tear themselves away from its intricate parallel world. What makes this novel particularly fascinating is Howard's academic background in philosophy and literature, which allows him to craft a story that feels both intellectually stimulating and emotionally devastating. In Howard's meticulously constructed world, a series of parallel valleys exist side by side, separated by mountains and heavily guarded borders. Each valley contains identical towns with identical inhabitants living at different points in time. The eastern valleys represent the future, while the western valleys contain the past. Travel between valleys is strictly controlled by an authoritative body called the Conseil, which processes petitions from citizens wishing to visit other valleys, typically to see deceased loved ones. 16-year-old Odile lives in this restrictive society, where most students apply for vocational apprenticeships around town. Her mother, who works in the basement archives of the Hotel de Ville, pushes her to aim higher for the prestigious Conseil despite Odile's natural shyness. Unlike regular apprenticeships, Conseil candidates need a nomination from their teacher, M. Pichegru. When Odile approaches Pichegru about a nomination, he assigns her a weekend essay with a provocative prompt. If you had permission to travel outside the valley, which direction would you go? This reveals the central restriction of their world. Travel between valleys is tightly controlled, with identical towns visible in parallel valleys to the east and west. Following her mother's advice that the question is a trap, since conseillers mainly deny travel requests, Odile writes that she would decline the opportunity to travel altogether. This seemingly simple assignment becomes the catalyst for everything that follows. When Pichegru initially rejects her application because she didn't directly answer his east or west question, Odile's carefully planned future begins to unravel. But a strange twist of fate, her accidental submission of a drunken, passionate critique of the valley's visitation practices, earns her a nomination after all, setting her on a path that will ultimately force her to confront impossible moral choices. As Odile begins her rigorous training for the Conseil, she becomes deeply entangled in the moral complexities of her society's stringent rules. The vetting program, an intensive 6-month process, tests candidates on their ability to judge petitions from citizens requesting permission to visit other valleys. These cases often involve heart-wrenching scenarios that challenge even the most seasoned decision-makers. A grieving widower desperate to see his deceased wife one last time. A father whose son was murdered seeking closure in another valley. A mother hoping to prevent her daughter from making a catastrophic mistake she witnessed in a future timeline. During this process, Odile makes a horrifying discovery that shakes her to her core. While hiking in the restricted northern woods, she accidentally witnesses masked visitors from another valley, the Piras, parents of her new friend Edme, making their permitted once-in-a-lifetime visit. Their presence in this timeline can only mean one devastating thing. In their valley, 20 years from now, Edme must be dead. This knowledge becomes an unbearable burden that Odile cannot share with anyone, least of all with Edme himself, for whom she's developing increasingly complex romantic feelings. Every shared laugh, every casual touch, every moment of connection is now tainted by this terrible secret. The novel brilliantly explores how foreknowledge can be a curse rather than a blessing, delving deep into the psychological toll of carrying such information. Imagine carrying the secret of someone's death while developing a friendship or even love with them. How would you act? What would you say? Could you ever be truly present in moments of joy, knowing they are numbered? As Odile reflects in her journal, Knowing someone's fate is an unfair burden. It changes how you see them in the present. Everything becomes colored by what you know is coming. Their future casts a shadow over their present, and you become a reluctant guardian of their timeline. This predicament creates a profound moral dilemma that tests the very foundations of their society's beliefs. Should Odile warn Edmé, potentially interfering with the timeline and violating the most sacred rules of her society, rules that have maintained peace and order for generations? Or should she remain silent, allowing events to unfold as they apparently must, becoming complicit in what feels like a preventable tragedy? The weight of this knowledge transforms her from an ordinary teenager into someone carrying an impossible secret, highlighting how information itself can be a form of imprisonment. Every interaction with Edmé becomes a delicate dance between present joy and future sorrow, between duty and desire, between the person she wants to be and the guardian of time she's sworn to become. The burden begins to manifest physically. Odile loses sleep, her academic performance suffers, and she finds herself withdrawing from friends and family, unable to fully engage in her present life while carrying this knowledge of the future. Her struggle represents a deeper examination of how foreknowledge affects free will, human connection, and the very nature of time itself. Against the backdrop of this high-stakes moral dilemma, Howard crafts a poignant coming-of-age story that masterfully weaves together the universal experiences of adolescence with the weight of impossible knowledge. Odile navigates typical teenage experiences, making new friends, experiencing first love, feeling self-conscious at parties, all while carrying knowledge no teenager should have to bear. Her every interaction is colored by her awareness of what's to come, creating a double consciousness that forces her to simultaneously live in the present and future. When Odile is invited to join a tight-knit group of peers, including Edmé, Joe, Justine, and Alan, she experiences the simple yet profound joy of belonging. Working together to build a fort in the woods creates a powerful memory for Odile, who cherishes being in the center of the chain as they pass materials up the slope. These moments of connection stand in stark contrast to her previous isolation and the burden of her secret knowledge. The fort becomes both a physical refuge and a symbol of the temporary nature of their friendship, knowing it will eventually stand empty of Edmé's presence. Howard captures the awkwardness and intensity of adolescent emotions with remarkable authenticity, depicting the exquisite agony of teenage social dynamics. When Odile buys a new green bathing suit for a beach outing, her self-consciousness is palpable. Standing nervously in my new green suit, I try to appear normal despite my anxiety. The simple act of choosing and wearing the swimsuit becomes laden with meaning, an attempt to both fit in and stand out, to be noticed while desperately hoping not to be noticed too much. At the beach, she watches her friends skinny dipping while she remains behind, drinking wine alone and observing Edmé and Joe talking intimately in the water. When he steadies her and she covers herself bashfully, their shared smile crushes me, Odile narrates, capturing the acute pain of teenage jealousy and rejection with visceral precision. These universal coming-of-age experiences gain extraordinary poignancy because of what Odile knows about Edmé's fate. Every shared laugh, every casual touch, every moment of connection is shadowed by her awareness that he will soon be gone. The normal teenage tendency to dramatize everyday moments takes on legitimate weight. These truly are precious, unrepeatable moments. When Joe later reveals that Edmé had feelings for Odile all along, the revelation becomes even more heartbreaking, a missed connection that can never be recovered, at least not in this timeline. This knowledge transforms what might have been a typical teenage regret into something far more profound. The weight of paths not taken when those paths lead to someone who will soon cease to exist. The author particularly excels at showing how Odile's foreknowledge affects her ability to form authentic connections. Every interaction is a performance, as she must pretend not to know what she knows, while simultaneously trying to savor every moment with someone she knows she'll lose. This creates a unique kind of loneliness, being physically present with her friends while emotionally isolated by her secret knowledge. The novel delves deeply into questions of interference and responsibility, exploring the intricate ethical dilemmas that arise when one has the power to alter the past. The Conseil, the governing body overseeing temporal travel, teaches that westward visitation, traveling to the past, risks altering reality itself. Unlike Eastern visitors who mainly risk personal harm through temporal displacement sickness or psychological trauma, westward travelers could inadvertently erase entire threads of existence through even minor interference. These changes would be imperceptible to everyone because they would rewrite history completely. No traces would remain of what was changed, creating a paradox where only the traveler might retain memories of an alternate timeline. This creates several fascinating philosophical problems that the narrative explores in detail. If you could save someone's life by changing the past, but doing so might fundamentally alter reality for thousands or even millions of others, would the action be justified? What if saving one life meant inadvertently causing others to never exist? The novel doesn't offer easy answers, but forces readers to wrestle with these questions alongside Odile, presenting scenarios of increasing moral complexity as the story progresses. The stakes become devastatingly personal when Edmé, a vibrant young time apprentice, disappears and is found drowned in the river near the temporal border. Odile, who had received a cryptic warning about this event but did nothing to prevent it, must live with the crushing weight of her inaction. This tragedy haunts her into adulthood, where we find her 20 years later working as a border guard, having abandoned her promising career with the Conseil. Her daily routine of preventing others from crossing becomes a form of self-punishment, a constant reminder of her perceived moral failure. The adult Odile has hardened into someone who rigidly enforces the very rules she once questioned, finding a bitter comfort in the absoluteness of regulation. When she encounters Alain, now middle-aged but still raw with grief for Edmé, he confronts her with a dangerous request: help him cross the border into the Western Valley to save their friend. This forces Odile to revisit her original moral failure and consider whether redemption is possible, even at great personal cost. The request is complicated by her deeper understanding of temporal mechanics and the potentially catastrophic consequences of interference. Howard creates a multi-layered narrative that functions as both a personal story of guilt and a broader thought experiment about moral responsibility. If you know something terrible will happen but are forbidden from intervening, are you complicit in the outcome? The novel suggests that knowledge without action is its own form of guilt, one that can consume an entire life. Through Odile's journey, we see how moral certainty can crumble in the face of personal loss, and how the weight of unintended consequences can shape a person's entire existence. The story explores how different characters justify their choices, from the Conseil's rigid adherence to non-interference to Alain's emotional plea for action, creating a complex tapestry of moral perspectives on the nature of responsibility and the price of intervention. In the novel's most dramatic turn, adult Odile makes the decision her teenage self couldn't. She escapes through the border fence to warn Edmé before his fatal accident. This act of interference creates a paradox that drives the novel's climactic sequence. As Odile races to save Edmé, she witnesses him slip and fall from the cliff just as history recorded. In a desperate act, she dives into the lake after him, pulls his unconscious body to shore, and performs rescue breathing until he coughs up water. This moment of successful intervention should be impossible, according to everything the Conseil has taught about interference. The novel's resolution hinges on a crucial revelation. Interferers from other valleys don't automatically undo themselves if they're outside their valley's borders when reality is rewritten. The Conseil keeps this secret to discourage interference, but it means Odile's sacrifice can actually save Edmé without erasing herself from existence. This creates a split timeline where teenage Odile encounters her older self at the fort after the rescue. The older Odile is captured by guards while the younger one is taken to the Hotel de Ville, where Yvrette reveals the truth about interference. Meanwhile, Edmé survives, creating a new reality where his death never occurred. The novel ends with young Odile discovering items her older self had hidden in their crawl space, evidence of the lonely existence she would have led if she hadn't interfered. When she visits Edmé's house and they exchange shy waves through his window, we see the possibility of a new future unfolding, one where their connection might flourish after all. This resolution offers a profound meditation on second chances and the possibility of rewriting our own stories. Even in a deterministic universe where time seems fixed, Howard suggests that acts of courage and sacrifice can create new possibilities, allowing us to escape the prisons of our past choices. Throughout the novel, Howard meticulously constructs a society built on layers of surveillance and control. The Conseil and the Gendarmerie function as complementary forces in maintaining the rigid boundaries between valleys, with the Conseil described as the head to the Gendarmerie's hands. This hierarchical system extends far beyond mere physical borders. It permeates every aspect of daily life. The Conseil deliberately maintains citizen ignorance about the true nature of interference, creating an atmosphere of mystery and fear that serves as its own form of control. They cultivate carefully crafted myths and half-truths, ensuring that even those who suspect the truth lack the knowledge to act on their suspicions. The novel's physical settings serve as powerful metaphors for confinement and restriction. The valley itself is a natural prison, hemmed in by towering mountains and reinforced by electrified fences that hum with constant warning. Within this larger cage, smaller ones exist. The school system channels students into predetermined career paths with scientific precision, limiting their choices while maintaining the illusion of freedom. The fort that the teenagers construct in the woods initially represents their attempt at autonomy, but its eventual discovery and destruction by authorities transforms it into a bitter lesson about the limits of rebellion. As an adult, Odile's position in the watchtowers and border outposts becomes particularly poignant. She becomes a willing participant in the very system she once fought against, monitoring others from her elevated position of enforced isolation. The mandatory masks worn by valley visitors emerge as one of the novel's most potent symbols of regulated identity and controlled interaction. These devices, ostensibly designed to prevent recognition and temporal paradoxes, create a cruel form of emotional torture. Visitors can observe their loved ones across time, but are forbidden from revealing their identities or forming genuine connections. This policy creates a society trapped in perpetual mourning. People glimpse tantalizing suggestions of lost family members, but are prevented from achieving emotional closure. The masks become physical manifestations of the barriers between human hearts. When Odile finally orchestrates her escape across the border, her actions represent more than mere physical liberation. They constitute a fundamental rejection of determinism itself. Her interference challenges the core premise of a society built on the belief that futures are immutable and must be carefully controlled. By choosing to act against the established order, she asserts the possibility of free will in a system designed to deny its existence. Her rebellion becomes a testament to human agency in the face of institutional control, suggesting that even the most carefully constructed systems of surveillance and restriction cannot fully contain the human spirit's drive toward freedom. At its heart, The Other Valley is about how we process grief and find closure in a world where technology offers tantalizing alternatives to natural mourning. The Valley's visitation system presents citizens with a seductive but ultimately hollow form of consolation. They can observe their deceased loved ones alive in parallel valleys, but cannot interact with them in any meaningful way. This creates a peculiar form of torture, where the bereaved can witness an alternate reality but remain forever separated from it by an impenetrable barrier. Young Odile demonstrates remarkable insight in her essay, arguing that consolation viewings serve only to suspend the natural grieving process. She astutely observes that these glimpses into other valleys create a dangerous form of emotional limbo, preventing people from processing their loss naturally. Her vow to advise future petitioners to embrace ordinary grief shows wisdom beyond her years. Yet, when confronted with Edmé's death, she falls victim to the very trap she warned against, spending 2 decades haunted by both his loss and her perceived failure to prevent it. The novel presents a rich tapestry of grief through its diverse characters, each representing different facets of loss and longing. L.M., the elderly widower, maintains a daily ritual of visiting his wife's tomb, his dedication both touching and troubling. His repeated petitions to view her in another valley reveal how grief can become a form of identity. C.R.'s situation is particularly heart-wrenching. Having lost his son to fraternal violence, he seeks a reality where his family remains whole, unable to reconcile with the brutal randomness of his loss. Quinton, the dying teacher, represents a different kind of grief, mourning not what was, but what will never be, as he hopes to glimpse the future grandchild he'll never know. Each petition before the Conseil becomes a philosophical examination of memory and mourning. The council members must wrestle with profound questions. When does remembrance become unhealthy attachment? At what point does looking backward prevent forward movement? Odile's observation about L.M., his was a grief that had persisted longer than my entire life, encapsulates the way sorrow can become a permanent state of being, a parallel valley of its own. The novel suggests that the very existence of the valley viewing system creates a cruel paradox. While it promises comfort, it actually intensifies suffering by keeping wounds perpetually fresh. When adult Odile finally succeeds in saving Edmé, the act represents more than just altering his fate. It demonstrates that true healing comes through active engagement with life rather than passive observation of what might have been. The story ultimately argues that authentic closure requires us to fully inhabit our present reality rather than living in the shadow of alternative possibilities. The Other Valley ultimately challenges us to consider what freedom means in a world where time seems fixed and deterministic. The Conseil teaches that the past cannot be changed without catastrophic consequences, creating a society resigned to the inevitability of fate. This doctrine manifests in everyday life through strict regulations, mandatory reporting of temporal anomalies, and the systematic suppression of alternative historical narratives. Yet, through Odile's journey, Howard suggests that determinism itself might be a form of control, a narrative imposed to maintain order rather than an absolute truth. The Conseil's authority rests on their claim to protect the timeline, but their methods reveal a deeper agenda of social control. When Odile successfully saves Edmé without unraveling reality, she demonstrates that the official doctrine about interference isn't entirely accurate. Her actions expose the cracks in the Conseil's supposedly infallible understanding of temporal mechanics. The novel doesn't offer easy answers about free will versus determinism. Instead, it suggests that the very act of questioning one's fate is itself a form of freedom. Even in a universe where timelines seem fixed, the courage to challenge established boundaries can create new possibilities. This theme emerges repeatedly throughout the narrative. In the underground resistance movement's small acts of temporal rebellion, in the secret network of timeline refugees, and in the growing community of dissidents who believe in the possibility of change. In the final scene, when young Odile waves to Edmé through his window, we see a future opening up that neither of them could have imagined, one made possible by an act of interference that should have been impossible. Their shy exchange represents not just a potential romance, but the radical possibility that we are not bound by predetermined paths. The moment resonates with deeper meaning as it challenges everything the characters have been taught about causality and fate. The price of this freedom is high. The older Odile sacrifices herself to create this new timeline, knowing she will cease to exist in the reality she creates. But her sacrifice transforms a story of loss and regret into one of redemption and possibility. She chooses to trade her own existence for a world where choice is possible, where love can flourish outside the constraints of predetermined timelines. In a world structured around the preservation of timelines, the most revolutionary act becomes the courage to imagine and fight for a different future than the one you've been shown. Howard weaves this philosophical exploration into the very fabric of the narrative, showing how personal choices ripple outward to challenge systemic control. The novel suggests that true freedom might not lie in the ability to change everything, but in the courage to act authentically even within constraints. Through Odile's story, we see how individual acts of defiance can crack open the possibilities for collective liberation.